Parrot Project, among many other very cool things, and I hope I pronounced his last name right.
Almost.
Almost?
I would say Leto, but it's pretty close. People have been mispronouncing my name my whole life. I'm part of the Portland Pearlmongers, and I do things in the bioinformatics world as well for monies, but this talk has nothing to do with that. I think we should perhaps continue.
Alrighty. So you got that mic there, so
okay.
Let's try that again.
That there's a parrot with a elephant riding on it, and futile attempt to get the ride of the Valkyries involved. We'll get it next time. I'd like to thank Sarah for putting this together. It was a really awesome picture.
I need a name for it as well.
Yeah, if anybody's got a suggestion for a name for our little logo there, speak up or tell us later. What's going on here? Normally, you don't think of bleeding edge features combined with a relational database management system. Parrot's pretty bleeding edge right now. But this is Postgres, and given that it is Postgres, we do all kinds of crazy stuff and manage to keep most things stable, although I was managing to crash this a lot this morning. First, I'd like to talk about who we need to blame for this whole mess. That's Jonathan Leto. Over here is Josh Tolley. Wave. I guess David Wheeler over there is going to some other talk, or maybe he's a victim of Enterprise DB's generosity. And then there's me. I should probably brighten up that picture.
It's a lot brighter on the screen.
And there's also Daniel Arbelo Arocha, whose picture we were too lazy to get in time for this talk. Sorry, Daniel. Those are people that have actually committed to the PL Parrot project. Let's talk about what Parrot is. It is...
How many people have heard of Parrot before here? Cool.
Wow.
Okay. So there are some people here that kind of saying, what is this Parrot thing? And you came to my talk. I'm very, very excited. So Parrot... It's a virtual machine for dynamic languages. It started in 2001 as the virtual machine for Perl 6. And as Perl 6 grew to be a virtual machine for all dynamic languages, or to support features of all dynamic languages, Parrot grew. And now it has outgrown that, and there's lots of languages being written. There's people hacking on Python on Parrot and Ruby on Parrot and all kinds of things. So it's a very general virtual machine for dynamic languages. It's register-based. If you want a few buzzwords, the alternate would be stack-based. It's just an implementation detail, but that is how it works inside. It's really freaking cool in many ways, but we'll get into. One of the really cool things is that we basically try to make every single thing pluggable. If you want to write your own garbage collector, you can do that. If you want to write your own I/O subsystem, you can do that. We have defaults there for the sane people that don't want to write their own garbage collectors and things like that. But we try to make every single subsystem pluggable, so people developing languages on Parrot, you have the full freedom to take the pieces of Parrot that you want and like, use those, and swap out the pieces you don't like. Interoperable is another huge design goal of Parrot. And we want to make all the languages that run on Parrot be able to talk to each other, use each other's libraries. Like, wouldn't it be nice for a Python script to be able to use a CPAN module or a Ruby program to use a Python egg or things of that nature? Those really cool things that you couldn't even really imagine doing now. If you build your languages on top of Parrot, those are the really amazing features that we work hard to make possible. We're still working on that stuff, but that is some of the really big vision goals. And dynamic. It's Parrot is made for dynamic languages. So, for instance, Java VM, that is for mostly static languages. So JVM is optimized for static languages. Parrot is optimized for dynamic languages, things that are changing at runtime, things like that. So just things to note.
Back to you.
Okay, so I guess I should explain that this runs on top of Postgres. If you got to ask, you ain't never going to know why. Sorry, Louie. Anyhow, so why did we do this? Well, it was a crazy project, and people who know me know that I take on crazy projects every once in a while, so that's part of it. But then there's a more important part. Writing and debugging and maintaining PLs. Hey, I've got an audience where I can do this. Who here has written a PL? Okay, wow, that's...
Okay.
Yeah, okay, yes. So that's probably the highest number of hands raised that I will ever see for this talk, at least until we get Parrot going, because we plan to make this easier. Writing them and all this stuff, it's a pain in the neck. Okay, so we plan to make it much, much less painful to write PLs. Another why is we want to make a PL toolkit. It's a way to make PLs quickly. It's sort of a little bit more infrastructure than, well, here's the SPI interfaces and... there's some example code out there, and good luck, which has kind of been the model so far.
Let me say something. And I'd just like to quote the Postgres man page for implementing PLs, which says, "And now you only need a few more thousand lines of code, and it will work." That is actually in the Postgres docs. So if you've never read that page, then you're lucky.
Right. So... clearly, those docs were a relic of an earlier age, and we're trying to bring Postgres into the present. Then there's another why, and it sort of goes to what Jonathan was talking about earlier, is that once you've written something in one language, you'd kind of like to be able to use it, so you just want to not repeat yourself. So do things like write a function in PL Perl 6 and call it from PL Python. There's every promise that we'll be able to actually get a PL Python because there's been only an untrusted PL Python for a lot of years. Should we go over the trusted versus untrusted issue now? Is that familiar to everybody? Ah.
Somewhat. One person. That doesn't mean everyone else.
Okay, let's talk about that for a little bit.
So I don't even feel totally like I wrap my head around it, but there's the concept of trusted and untrusted PLs. Both of us feel that they're ill-documented in the Postgres source, the actual specification for what does a trusted PL do, what does an untrusted PL do. You can read the source of every PL, and everyone kind of has different, slightly different security issues and concerns, and there's a lot of things going on under the hood that are not described in any public documentation. So when you write a new PL, you don't quite know if your trusted and untrusted version of your PL is actually living up to what people think they are. So we're of the opinion that Postgres should have a very nice specification for what trusted and untrusted means, and we've sent a nice email to PG Hackers this morning, which is starting to get some flames going on it, so it should be fun.
Yeah, I was going to heckle Stephen Frost, but he's at the other talk, so I will heckle him later on the mailing list because he was the first person that flamed about it, I think. Okay, so that said, we needed to somehow figure out how to take on this very ambitious project. And it took about 5 years before there was some way to do it. And Jonathan went and did it. So we did PL Peer. And let's talk about what Peer is.
Okay, so I'm assuming most of you have not programmed in Parrot Virtual Machine before, so I'll go a little bit into Peer. Peer is the Parrot Intermediate Representation. It's basically the language that you will be using if you're coding in Parrot, and it's, I consider it the friendliest, nicest assembly language that you will ever code in. It has objects, it has namespaces, it has continuations, it has very nice syntax sugar, so it's very low level, and it's simple to parse, which makes it very fast, but it has very nice features. If you've done any assembly programming ever in your life, you will write some Peer and just say, wow, this is pretty awesome. And we'll show you some examples.
So the first problem was, we had to figure out a few different things in order to get even the most rudimentary PL Peer support going. First thing we had to do is figure out how to embed a parrot. Well, the thing is, the state of parrot embedding support is kind of in flux right now, which is a sort of euphemism for complete disarray. It was complete disarray when we got started. It has since become a lot less disarray, and largely due to Jonathan's efforts. So we're using Parrot Trunk. Actually, this was sort of a hint that Parrot and Postgres were meant to be together, because, like, what other parrot has a trunk? Okay. Got PostgreSQL master, because we're moving to Git.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
So is Parrot as well.
Parrot is also moving to Git. Let's see. We should probably talk about that
A little bit more about the embedding API. Really, PL Parrot is about the third project in the existence of Parrot to embed Parrot into something else. There was Mod Parrot, which is embedding Parrot in Apache, which was so early on that basically they had to include Parrot internal header files, and Mod Parrot is very tightly coupled to the Parrot revision you're on. It doesn't live on the other side of the fence and kind of, you know, use releases of Parrot and things like that, because the API was so rudimentary then. There's also a project to bridge Perl 5 and Perl 6 called BlizzCoast that embeds Parrot. But PL Parrot has been driving the embedding API. I continually find things that are not exposed to the public, you know, header, in the public interface of headers, and I'm a Parrot core developer, so I bug people on the IRC channel, I make bug, you know, track tickets, and if I can fix it, I will, but if I don't, since I know all the people, I complain loudly, and things usually get fixed within hours or days, or sometimes minutes, which is really cool. So it's really awesome, the interplay between the two projects. There's also a spec for the Parrot Embed API. It's Parrot Developer Doc 10, if you're really into that stuff, and you can go read exactly what the spec is. It's a very nice spec. It's just lots of it are not quite implemented or totally stable yet.
Has anybody here read a PDD?
Wow. Awesome.
Again, that's probably the highest number.
Yeah, this is. We've got a lot of Parrot knowledge in this room right here, so this is exciting. All right, back to you.
Okay, so that was kind of the embedding issue. The next issue is that, fun as Peer is to write, we really want to have those higher level languages.
Just define. I'm a mathematician by training, so I don't like to use undefined terms. HLL, high-level language, and this is high-level compared to a virtual machine. So basically anything that you write any language you write on top of Parrot, we consider it high level. So it's a little higher level than the virtual machine. So, for instance, Perl 6 on Parrot would be an HLL, or Python on Parrot. Any language you write is a high level language to the virtual machine.
Okay. So, there hadn't really been a high level language implemented API. It was very rudimentary and involved lots of cover plate prying, and so we're not trying to use it just yet. We'll probably use PL Squawk first. Does anybody use Squawk?
Talk about that a little bit. So Parrot comes with an example language called Squawk, which basically it's the simplest HLL you could write, and it's in the examples languages directory of the Parrot repo. So if you're interested in writing HLL, that's probably the first place you want to go look to just see how it's done. And we are going to create part of our toolkit kind of vision is that we want to make it simple for people to write their own language and then use it as a PL. So we're going to create an API such that you say, here's my Parrot language, and then give me a hook so that I can now write stored procedures in my cool Parrot language that I just wrote. We are working on that right now.
We could use some help.
Yes, we will beg for help many times during this presentation. So PL Peer is mostly there. It's got lots of tests. We can do lots of cool stuff, write stored procedures in Peer, things like that. Also, just last night, I hacked together the untrusted version for funsies. Oh, boy. I got it. Okay. And that still has some rough edges, and that's what brought me to complaining about there's no really good spec between an untrusted and a trusted language, what they should do, what they should not. So PL Per U has a few security mechanisms, but definitely does not have all the security mechanisms to really, you know, be production ready in an environment where you do not trust the people that are writing your stored procedures. But we've got a start, we've got them separated out, and we're working on both. And also this whole PL specification thing, we really want the community to think hard about defining exactly what a trusted and an untrusted language is. And we think that possibly new CVE security issues could come out of people really thinking hard about what each type of PL should do and then go analyze the source code of all these PLs that people use. I'm sure that some of them are not securing in every manner that they could be, or perhaps, you know, what people expect them to be securing but are not. So specifications are great. And that concludes our HLL section.
The next thing you have to figure out how to do, and this Josh really did an enormous amount of work on, is marshaling data in and out of functions. So this is not tricky because PostgreSQL has this amazing variety of data types. And we now support the basic ones. That's kind of cool. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So
what basic?
Well, I guess Jonathan wants to weigh in on that.
I want to weigh in. We're going to fight over the microphone. So it was very fun to get the basic data types working. So basically, basic means we've got our integers, our floats, our strings, and all the cousins of those in Postgres. You know, there's var, char versus text and all that. They basically work the same way. So we support all those basic data types, floats, ints, strings. Time types are a little more interesting. I remember I've talked a little bit to Tim Bunce about like time and date time support. I believe PL Perl does not support the times at all, and there's good reason because it's non-trivial. Currently, you can pass time data types back and forth between PL Parrot, but we don't have an API to interact with them from the Parrot world. So that is something we need, and that brings me to my next topic. We need things like how to interact with byte A's and how to interact with time objects and things like that. So we need some people that, it's mostly people that know about Postgres internals, but we just need Parrot to be able to speak this language of some of these more interesting, exotic, or additional data types. I think Postgres has something like over 100 data types if you start going into the GIS data types and all that. So if you're interested in a data type, we want you to hack on it and make it work.
Just generally, we think that, that Parrot would benefit quite a bit by being able to know about time underneath and about, say, you know, byte A's or whatever, however Parrot would conceive of them. And this is yet another example of how in free software you get two projects sort of bumping together and improving each other. Instead of bumping together and being nasty. Anyhow, so that's my free software song I will not sing. I will just keep going. So that's the marshalling part. Well, we've gone quite a ways into this talk, and we've not yet shown you any code.
I want to see some code, David.
Does anybody else want to see code? Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, so here's some code. So let's take a look at the first little bits of this. We have something that should look fairly familiar to people who've used PLs before. It says create function, and then it returns a thing, and it talks about the language, and then there's a function body, and there my expertise ends.
And can I point towards the screen here? What do we got? Wow, I got two thingies here. Okay. So between the double dollars, we have peer. So right here, we start out with dot param num x. These things that start with dots are compiler directives. So you're telling the compiler things. So here we're saying this function test float add. See, that's Postgres up there, and we told Postgres it takes a float. But now we've also got to tell peer that our first and only argument is a float. Parrot calls floats numeric types, so that's why we have a num here. So all this really says is where our first and only parameter is a float, which Parrot calls a numeric, and it's called x. All right, now this is assembly-ish right here. Like, so what we have cool syntax sugar. We can, you know, we can add and assign at the same time. So I didn't do it. Don't. My phone's over there. Okay, I'm going to continue. So the next line, we're saying, all right, let's add 5 to x. This is actually straight out of the PL Parrot test suite. This is just a test that verifies we can take a float in, modify it, and return the modified variable.
This seems like very short compared to what I dimly recall of assembly language. That little bit there.
And we'll show more. But and then the last line here, we've got a dot return an x. And this again is a compiler directive. I feel that we're getting some crazy resonance here. This is a compiler directive that it should seem pretty familiar that we're going to return the value x now from the stored procedure back to Postgres. There's a lot of data marshalling going on. We took in a Postgres float. Behind the scenes, PL Parrot converted it to a Parrot numeric object. It allowed Parrot to modify it. Parrot returns the modified Parrot object. And then behind the scenes again, PL Parrot converts this Parrot numeric type back to the Postgres float so that the stored procedure then returns the Postgres float back to whatever called this stored procedure. So that data marshalling that we talked about, all of that's going on in between, you know, on basically both sides of this. We're marshalling the data in, converting it, doing whatever we want to do to it, and then marshalling the data when we go out. And there's just some fun code going on there that if you read the source, you'll see. Okay. Cool. Another example. So here is just concatting some strings. So we have a function, a stored procedure called text concat. It has an input parameter of a text. And it returns a text. Okay, and we basically have our standard boilerplate of stored procedures here. Now, I'll go in a little bit. Like I mentioned, Parrot is register-based. You get an infinite number of registers. You never have to think, oh, do I have too many registers right now? Am I spilling over my registers, whatnot? Parrot takes care of all that for you. You have an infinite number of registers to play with. So there's four types of registers, and they start with a capital letter. The S are for string registers. There's also numeric registers for float-like things. There's integer registers, and then there's registers for objects. We'll not go into all that right now. Right now, we say, all right, my first string register, put this string in there. My second string register, put this string in there. Third string register, concatenate those two strings and put it in there. That's a dot that concats two strings, just like Perl 5. But this is like assembly, and if you wanted to concat two strings in assembly, like, you'd be writing a lot more code in other assembly languages. So this is a lot of syntax sugar that really makes your life simple, and I think it's pretty cool. And then we do a similar thing here. We have our return compiler directive, which all it does is return this third string register that we created, PL/parrot. And, of course, all that data marshaling stuff is going on in the background.
Well, I just noticed that that there's a little problem with this piece of code. Has anybody seen it yet? Sorry?
You're throwing away the input parameter.
Throwing away the input parameter. That's right.
Not necessarily the bug, guy.
Yeah. Well, it's confusing, and it's
yeah.
It shouldn't have had that input parameter. Yeah. We could remove that.
Sure, please,
question. The question is, instead of using S3, could we have directly put it in S2? And the answer is, Jonathan knows.
Yeah, you could have reused S2 right here. There's even like a dot equals as well. I didn't want to do too much syntax sugar, but yes, we could have just kept reusing the same string register if we wanted. I thought it made it slightly easier to read by just showing that we have many registers to play with, but that's a great question. Yes?
So I'm not really very interested in writing the parrot assembly
code. Of course. That's what HLLs are for. Right. But continue.
So I was actually surprised to see that this would be even, like, what would be the point of writing
Sure. Sure. That is that goal of having HLLs would be you write your HLL, and then all this code in here would be in your high-level language, and then PL Parrot knows how to boil that down into peer or even the bytecode, because this peer actually boils down to Parrot bytecode, similar to JVM bytecode. So what exactly is your question, though? I think I'm a little confused.
What I'm seeing is now is that I'm going to say language PL parrot as, and then inside I'm going to say, oh, by the way, this is Perl, not Python.
No, I hear your question. I hear what you're saying. So, oh, okay, the mic did not hear your question. So the question was, why our language is PL parrot here, but how is that going to work for HLLs? Is that basically right now? This is an alias for PL peer. So we could have also written PL peer right here, and that would have said, okay, that's this very specific language. If you had, let's say, your HLL is called foo, you would actually just write, my language is PL foo here. And PL parrot would actually come with or know about an array of HLLs and an array of PL languages. So it basically installs these language handlers, is what Postgres calls them, and so you would just give your PL a different name, and then from that name, it would know what to do with the source that you gave it. Does that answer your question a bit? Great. Is there any other questions?
So maybe another answer to a similar question.
Cool.
We're doing peer right now. It's the easiest. The eventual plan is obviously to support Parrot or Perl 6 or Perl 5 or whatever else based. based on Parrot, but here is the easiest place to start.
It's the cornerstone. It's the basis of all the other really awesome, cool things to do. So, yes.
Is it conceivable that peer will never be, I guess you said there's a peer, peer might never be a safe language?
The question was if peer will have a safe and unsafe or trusted, untrusted version. Just last night, I made the separation. So before last night, there was really only one PL Parrot or PL Peer, and it had some security mechanisms, but not all, and it was all like mixed into one PL. Last night, I separated it out, so I created a trusted and untrusted version. Then I saw that there's no good spec for what each should do and started complaining. But I'm adamant of there being a trusted and untrusted version of PL Parrot languages. So, for instance, if you want to write an HLL, you will get for free the trusted and untrusted version because there will be a trusted and untrusted PL Parrot. And then your HLL, let's say it's foo, your PL foo would be based on PL peer, and your foo you, the untrusted version, would base off of PL peer you. So,
what I was saying is that it could be that you had a Perl and a Perl U. They both use peer.
Sure.
And peer can never be made untrusted because it's too powerful. It's the assembly of the system. But the higher level language can sanitize it for you. That's another model.
Let me try and see if I understood the question. The idea is that somebody would create a supposedly trusted language atop the PL peer untrusted in base. That pretty much counts as pilot error. Just a sec. It pretty much counts as pilot error because the way you want to actually do this control is make sure that the virtual machine that it's executing on can never do the wrong thing. So that's what I mean by pilot error. There's really no reason for you to recreate all those controls in all your higher level languages when you have this backstop that would say, this just can't happen. So yeah, pilot error. Don't create languages that are called trusted on top of this untrusted framework. You will just be letting yourself in for tears. Okay, now we get to access control. We've talked about this a little bit. So we already have denied access to the file system, and Jonathan can talk more about how that was done.
So we were one of the first projects to embed Parrot, so definitely there's a spec for security features of Parrot, and everyone wants them, but mostly I am the one that needs them right now, so I get to implement them. So Parrot, there's not a real way to say, hey, this whole Parrot interpreter can't access the file system, but a really cool Parrot developer, Austin, gave me an idea to basically pull the carpet out from under the current Parrot interpreter and say, actually, you want this file system object, but I'm just going to replace that with my own, and it doesn't do anything you want. So I basically fake out the current interpreter and say, yeah, you wanted that file system object that lets you open file handles and read files and things like that. No, I'm just going to tell you to use this other one, which doesn't have that method in it. And so basically I just rip out the ability to open file handles from the interpreter that is in PL Parrot. So right now we can deny file system access. You can't go read things in PG data and things like that. Obviously we want this to be a little more configurable. We want this, perhaps you're a very angry DBA and you want to send a nasty message to the user and tell them that they're currently being tracked by the FBI and maybe send an ICBM to their current latitude, longitude, who knows. So network access control is also, we currently, I think that because the network file handles kind of inherit from regular file handles, they should be secure right now, but I don't believe it because I don't have tests that verify that yet. So Right now, it could be we still need to test whether, you know, you can bind to a port from the untrusted or trusted language. And again, this is where the specification for trusted and untrusted breaks down, because there's nothing about whether in the trusted version of the language can open up ports or bind to certain ports or do other things. It's obvious that you don't want it to delete files in your file system, but should you allow it to bind to a high number port? Maybe. Maybe some people would consider that okay. Maybe some others wouldn't. So we need a specification for what trusted versus untrusted is. Question.
Yes. Files or vice versa.
Yes.
If there's some place
a configuration setting
to configure those things,
yes,
to store that configuration, it would be not be able to do.
I just want to say this for the recording, and I'll get to your question. There was a comment that it would be very nice to have this gradient between trusted and untrusted, where the database administrator can choose to say, oh, you know, I want to allow maybe binding to high number ports, but not have any file system access, which is somewhere in between trusted and untrusted, which I don't think any PL currently has a configurable interface like that right now.
Actually, PL Ruby sort of does have a slider that goes there, but there's no. It would be nice for the Postgres community to agree on this slider, or possibly on several sliders.
Cool. So I got to go read the source to PL Ruby right now, I guess. So, all right, your question, sir. Oh, yeah, it's very confusing, so yeah.
Trusted and safe.
Yeah.
The version of something means something. And it says, no, I have to pull XML resources off the net. Like, okay, so now you need to, it's other things. So you need to have a whole vector of permission.
I agree that, yes.
So what happens is that I think that you wind up defining high-level languages which claim to be safe, but run on top of the unsafe peer because they have to access, they're going to provide the sophisticated, you know, I parse XML, you don't parse XML, I read from the network and parse XML for you. That's a trusted operation, but I need the trusted stuff below it. But I export an interface above it, which is, you know, safe.
I hear what you're saying. Okay? So I think that's probably an implementation detail of do higher level restricted languages, what do they base off of? Do they base off of the more restricted or less restricted version of PL Parrot? That's an implementation detail that hopefully other people won't have to bother with, and that'll be us, you know, figuring out how do we provide these sliders to have a gradient of configurability and make it secure as well.
Just learn the lessons from VMS.
Whoa.
VMS failed in the security space, not because it was less secure than Unix, which had one super user, but because it was more secure than Unix. And no one could figure out what the set of security permission to do anything was.
So the comment was that if we make the security stuff wherever it is too complex, people will simply shut off all of it in order to get stuff done, and that's a great thing to bear in mind. I think that the Postgres community does need to come up with unified ways to do security, and document those very well. And that's why I'm thinking that like peers should be able to turn that stuff on and off. But you know, that's sort of a design discussion, and we're not going to get into one of those right now. We can do that later, maybe at the Royal Oak. Okay, so here's what we have so far: an actual PL. That's actually wrong now.
There should be commas around there. It's PL peer and
PL peer and PL peer U. We have tap tests via PG tap. Yes. Well, first off, I'd like to plug my coworker David Wheeler, who did PGTAP, and then talk about how we actually use them. That's Jonathan's job.
Is anyone here familiar with PGTAP? Used it before or heard of it? Or a few people? Okay. TAP is a test anything protocol. It, I think, came from the Perl 5 community, and it's just a very simple text-based protocol to write test suites. It's very easy to parse and very easy to read, and David Wheeler implemented basically a nice way to run tests in Postgres that uses this, and it's a great way to see what's happening, and then there's nice utilities to parse TAP output, and it can tell you, oh, one of your 90,000 tests failed, or you know, none of them failed, or a few of them exited with a weird exit code, but still didn't. You know, it parses the output and can give you a nice summary, so that as the human, you're not reading every single line of the output of your test. So we use a version of PGTAP in PL Parrot to test, and I'm very much a test-driven developer. I don't think that PL Parrot would exist right now without PGTAP, because it very much guided me on what I was doing wrong and how stupid I was being, because I had a test suite to run, and I tweak a few lines of code, run my test suite, see what color smoke came out, and then go back and fix. We also have a Git repo on GitHub. Anyone can check us out, fork us, check, you know, look at our code, submit patches, please do. We use the GitHub issue tracker. We have a bunch of issues on there, basically anything that's not implemented yet. I make an issue for any bug that I think we have, make an issue for anything like that. So if you want to see specifically what we do not have, or what it, maybe your skills could, you know, where your skills could be used, you can go check out our issue tracker and find something to do.
Say, maybe the Postgres project could use the GitHub. No.
No flaming right now. Okay, no trolling. We also have an IRC channel, #PLParrot on Freenode, if you want to come hang out and talk to us. If you have any problems, if you try to install it and you get a weird error or anything like that, come hang out in the IRC channel. We'll help you get PLParrot working. And we have a lot of enthusiasm as well. So, yeah! What we'll do soon. Oh, I can do this. So, argument passing, basically this comes down to being able to marshal more data types. I'm sure as people start using PL Parrot, they'll want to be passing in and out more of these data types that we do not currently support. So that is on our things to do. And I guess that's both of these two things are similar. There's other argument passing things, but those two bullets are really very much related. Tests. We have currently about 30 tests that test different permutations of passing in, passing out, different data types, testing that the restricted version removes the ability to access the file system. And any feature that I feel PL Parrot has, I don't know that it's actually there until I have a test that passes. That's my philosophy. So I'm very much, I need a test to prove that it works. So run our test suite and please tell us what's going on in your system. What we want. Sandboxing. This is sandboxing is needed at the Parrot level. We're currently doing a lot of tricks at the PL Parrot level to sandbox, but this is driving the need for an API for sandboxing at the Parrot virtual machine level. And there's some design documents, there's some specs, but it's not been implemented yet. I'm working on that stuff, but I very much would enjoy other people. If you have some tuits and if you have a knowledge of maybe how JVM does its sandboxing, that would be very valuable to bring and to do stuff with Parrot. PL Perl recently had a really cool feature where it has a bit. It removes opcodes, or at least in the current Perl interpreter, it makes certain opcodes not available. And that is really the security route that you want to go. You don't want to have the opcodes there, then have a little layer of code that denies access to them, because there could be some crazy buffer overflow, weird stuff going on. You could access those opcodes somehow. So you really want to remove the opcodes from the current interpreter so it is not possible to do certain things. We want that for PL Parrot. PL Perl, I think, just got that commit in on Monday or something, or at least it's in the released version of PL Perl on Monday. And thanks to Tim Bunce for working on that stuff. And you should probably upgrade PL Perl if you're really security conscious, because there's some security bugs. All right, what else do we want? We want HLLs. So the PL Parrot people will start working on the API for defining HLLs, and we'll have some example ones. But then it's really up to the community of, you know, what do you want your high level, you know, PL language to look like? What do you want to do with this cool toolkit that now exists to make writing a PL something you could do in a few days or maybe even a few hours instead of at least weeks of work? You know, I mean, it is a lot of work to deal with creating a PL. So it's similar to the philosophy of Parrot. Parrot's philosophy is, you're someone who wants to write a new programming language. We want to give you the tools to do that in an afternoon. We want you to be able to start your programming language and have a basis for it in a few hours or a day, instead of writing your own Yak, Lex madness and going crazy. So this is similar for PL Parrot. We want you to be able to very quickly have a cool idea and say, I want to create this PL on Postgres, and be able to do it in a short period of time. And of course, we want more developers. So if you are interested, we're going to give you a bunch of contact info, but find us on IRC, find us on GitHub, and get involved. And of course, users. So if you have a cool idea for using PL Parrot, please let us know. If there's this little feature that would totally rock your world and you would use PL Parrot, if this one little feature exists, tell us, and it'll probably exist soon if it's possible. So we're very open to ideas. We want it to be used, so we want the feedback from people to say, well, if this little thing was configurable, then I would use it, but since it's not, I'm not going to use it. Just tell us, and we will bend to your will. You just let us know that how you will use this, and we will add the features. We have the code up on GitHub. It's under my GitHub name, Lido. So if you go there, you will find a whole bunch of stuff, the issue tracker and all the commits and everything like that. There's also a mailing list, which we totally forgot to put on the slides. It's a Google group called PL Parrot. So if you just search for PL Parrot Google group, I'm hoping that it'll come up there pretty quickly. And I think I'll go back to David.
So questions, comments?
Flames.
Anybody? Sorry?
I hate birds.
You hate birds. Well, I'm not entirely sure what we can do about that. Yes?
Can you rename the project? Maybe I missed the first slide, but so I guess I thought that part of the point was that I would now be able to run all the various Parrot languages, Perl, Ruby, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
The question was, why haven't we done everything that we thought we might be able to do? And the answer is, I took an enormous chance submitting this talk at all, because when I submitted it, very little of this had actually been done yet. So if you want to be able to do all these things, I'm sorry that we haven't delivered it as soon as we would have liked. But that is definitely the goal. Right. Right. So we concentrated a little bit of this on language developers, although since language developers have already come to the Parrot project in a large and significant way, there's huge numbers of languages already implemented on Parrot. We'd like to make an easy way to plug all the extant ones in. And those are all the as far as I know, all the common languages out there that they call scripting, so things like Ruby and Perl 6 and Python, and maybe not Perl 5, but there's some work on that I know less about. We're working on it.
And more questions?
More questions, comments, Rotten Tomatoes? Alrighty. Thanks, eh?
With 9 minutes to spare.
Well, now you can go get some coffee or something. Well, the first suggestion I made that you thought was a fine idea, I'll mark down this day.
Thank you very much.
It's almost like the Clyde Boykin talk. I need to change my opinions in the slide.
Oh, yes. Feedback on this talk is much appreciated. We'll be tweeting about that and where to give the feedback. And yes, we actually do appreciate the feedback, because without criticism, we cannot improve.
Without feedback, there's nothing to discourage you from doing it again next time. Can we get coffee?
The one thing that really speaks against it is that then we're doing something that the federal economy.
Oh, come on, this has happened before.
Really? Yes, but I try not to make a habit out of it.
Sure. I mean, not often or anything, but it has happened.
Who's in here?
The output of the